Okay, most people are familiar that on Hanukkah, when we light our menorah or Chanukiah, that the placement, where are we supposed to put that Chanukiah, that menorah? Where is the best place to put it?
Window.
No.
So you want to
The door.
suggest the window. Any window?
Israel, they put them at the door. The
Oh,
door.
Doorstep.
so okay,
At the doorstep.
so Marcia correctly said that really the most perfect place to put it is by your doorway on the outside.
Outside.
That's really the best place to put it. Liz, you'll have to come on one of our trips to Israel.
Yep, I was just going to say that. They're
Because
all over Israel outside.
it is a sight to behold.
I want to come tell.
Thousands and thousands of menorahs are outside in these great, beautiful glass enclosures so that the wind doesn't blow them out. And it is stunning. From up in the north to the Galil, down south in Eilat, everybody, everywhere, everywhere.
So
Now,
nice.
so Sharon and Marcia, since you both mentioned it, okay, the doorway is quite a big frame. Where by the doorway?
To the right.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's not a fair answer. To the right, which way am I facing?
When you face the door, when you open the door, it's on your right.
Am I on the inside or the outside?
The outside.
So if I'm outside and I'm facing my doorway, my front door, you want me to put it on the right.
Correct.
Agreed, everyone?
That's where I remember seeing them.
The opposite side
No,
of the
it's the
mezuzah.
opposite.
Oh, the opposite. Eliana
Because
is saying that it should be on the opposite side, on the left side.
so that the halakha is that on your Hanukkah lamp is on the left if you're looking out, or if you're looking in on the left, because on the right is your mezuzah.
Oh, that's really the part I was looking for. Whether, I don't care. However you want to picture it in your mind, the bottom line is that the mezuzah is supposed to be on one doorpost and the menorah, the Chanukiah, is supposed to be on the opposite doorpost. So that
Okay.
when you pass through the doorway, you are completely surrounded with mitzvah. That's really the, now. There have been many, many, many eras in Jewish history where the opportunity to light outside by your doorway became irrelevant. We couldn't do it. Then we come to Liz's point, and that is the next best place to place to put it is by your window. Which window? Got lots and lots of windows.
Front window.
Window.
Front window.
Facing the main street.
Thank
Facing
you.
the
That's really
street.
what I'm looking for. I'm looking
Great.
for the piece of information that says it should be the window that faces the public, faces the street. Right? In Hebrew, it's called the Reshut HaRabim, the public domain. Why? Because part of the mitzvah, when we light the menorah, is to publicize the miracle. We publicize it, and therefore we put it in the window facing the public street. That's the long and short of it. Now, as with everything in Jewish law, and certainly when it comes to Jewish perspectives, we have to ask ourselves, okay, that's a practical reason, but is there something more about this window that perhaps we can glean an insight about that will deepen our appreciation for what it is we're doing, and why specifically that the Chanukiah is done by the window? To the best of my knowledge, it doesn't say anywhere that you're supposed to eat matzah when you're sitting on the windowsill facing the public domain. To the best of my knowledge, I don't recall ever seeing that you're supposed to shake your lulav and etrog opposite the window. Something unique about this holiday of Chanukah that we're supposed to be something with the window. Strange, right? Never thought about it. So, to really appreciate this, we have to go back one Torah portion. It's really last week's, but Hanukkah always falls out the week of Miketz, this week's Torah portion. So I took license, I took the liberty of cheating. Anyway, but last week, we came to a part of the story that is difficult. The story of Joseph down in Egypt. We get the part. We've talked about the brothers. We've talked about the fact that he ends up being sent by his father to check on his brothers, even though he knows that's going to be trouble for him. And ultimately he's sold, and the caravan takes him down to Egypt, and he's sold as an eved, as a servant. To whom? To a man by the name of Potiphar. Potiphar is the chief executioner in the criminal justice system down in Egypt. It's a guy you want to, you know, definitely room and board, must be very cheap there. Okay? Not too many applicants. Fine. So Joseph is there. Comes this part of the story of where the Torah tells us that Potiphar's wife has certain advances on Joseph, to the point of where that fateful day, there's no other workers around. The house is empty other than Mrs. Potiphar and Joseph. Mrs. Potiphar says, "This is my chance." So she goes ahead and she really forwards herself towards Yosef, grabs his garment, grabs him by the lapels and says, "Be with me." Joseph is caught in a quandary. What do I do? What do I do? Well, we know the end of the story is, the way the Torah describes it, is that he ripped himself away, leaving part of his torn garment now in her hands, and he flees to the outside. He leaves. He doesn't want to commit a terrible act of immorality. Okay. And we know the rest of the story. Ultimately, she turns it around and she says, he tried to forward himself on her, tried to rape her. And Potiphar is like, I can't have any of this. And he throws him in the prison. And then we know the rest of the story in terms of he's there with the wine steward and the baker, and they have their dreams, and shoom, then we're off and running. Okay. This story, though, is deepened when you delve a little bit deeper, when you examine in the Midrash. The Midrash tells us that at that moment, when Potiphar's wife grabs a hold of Yosef, he has a critical decision to make. Commit the sin or break free and suffer the consequences. What, asks the Midrash, what gave Joseph the necessary inner motivation? Like, what gave him that burst of, I'll call it adrenaline, but I mean it in a spiritual sense, the spiritual adrenaline for him not to commit that sin? So the Midrash, the Talmud tells us the following, that a vision of his father, he saw a vision of his father, Jacob, that appeared to him, and I'm stressing the word on purpose, it appeared to him in a window. He saw the reflection of his father in the window, and he envisioned his father saying the following to him: Joseph, Joseph, in the future, there will come a time when all of your brothers are going to be, their names are going to be, not emblazoned, but engraved on the beautiful Shoham stones of the Kohen Gadol, of the high priest that had all the names, similar to the breastplate that he wore. All the names of the tribes, the names of your brothers are all going to be written on it. And technically, you should be a part of it. If you choose to commit this sin, you will not be part of that system. Your name will not be part of it. That was enough, says the Midrash, says the Talmud, for Yosef to have the inner strength to say, no, I will not commit that sin. And he was able to pull himself away, suffering whatever the consequences were. Forgetting just, I mean, we'll examine what the meaning of this Midrash is trying to convey to us, but I want to just point it out. What would have been lost, or let's say it more positively, the Midrash seems to throw in a piece of information, very trivial, that is not germane to the story, that Jacob's appearance came to him in a window. The reflection in a window. Who cares? Why can't it just be that Joseph had this vision that his father came to him and said, hey, don't do this? What does it have to be specifically by a window? This is the term that the Medrash and the Talmud use. So let's delve a little bit deeper. But let's ask a very, non-PC question. Was Mrs. Potiphar just an absolute scoundrel? Was she just a woman who had certain desires for a man? I mean, is that how we always learn the story? I know I did. But but I think there might be something more. It's not because I thought of this, but again, I look to the sources. Here's a fascinating piece. Hold that thought, and I'm going to give you a fact and see if you can piece together. Joseph ultimately has two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, right? We're familiar with them, Ephraim and Manasseh. Can someone please tell me what Joseph's wife's name was?
Oh.
The daughter of Potiphar.
Say that again?
The daughter of Potiphar.
Oh, the daughter of Potiphar is 100% true. And look at Liz's face. Holy moly. She's like, what? They didn't tell me that in Hebrew school. No. Potiphar's own daughter. Her name was Asnat. Asnat marries Joseph and has the two sons.
Like us not having Thanksgiving dinner with my family.
Yes, and I can only imagine how sitting around his father-in-law, and more importantly, his mother-in-law's Friday night dinner saying, mom, can... No, let's not go there. Okay, right? This gotta be... So Joseph marries Mrs. Potiphar. Let's put it in perspective here. Mrs. Potiphar's daughter. Really? The Talmud is very concerned about this. Like all the people, that's who he marries? Okay. So here's the piece of information I need to share with you. Both Mrs. Potiphar, Mrs. Potiphar for sure, was given a vision. She was told by, I don't know if I want to call it God, or some kind of vision, that a descendant of hers was going to become great amongst the Jewish people. She had a vision that ultimately there will come seed through her, through Joseph. Whoa. This paints a whole new picture to the story here. It almost sounds as if Mrs. Potiphar is acting that she got insider information, don't tell the FCC, she got insider information that a descendant of hers is gonna come through Joseph. So she's like, yes, that must mean that I'm destined to be with Joseph to produce a child that will ultimately become a great leader in the Jewish people. So she continually tries advances to Joseph to fulfill this vision. Now, this is, I'm telling you, you think this is wild? Wait, we're warming up.
Listen.
What in truth, well, let me ask you this. Was the vision crazy?
No,
it was not, because we know factually now that Joseph ultimately marries Potiphar's daughter, from which Ephraim and Manasseh become part of the tribes and the rest of Jewish history is written. She wasn't so far off. She was off by one generation. She was not the chosen one. Her daughter was. What was this vision that she had? So let's go on a journey. A journey that I love to call mazel. Like you wish somebody mazel tov, mazel tov. What does the word mazel mean? Most people translate it as luck. When you say mazel tov, you're wishing somebody good luck in the future. Best of luck to you, my man.
Good flow.
Okay, so thankfully, you recall a conversation and perhaps a class we've had of the importance of this idea. Let's take a step back to appreciate what mazel really is. Michelle is right. Ultimately, the word means a flow, F-L-O-W. But let's see how we get there. Okay? Can we agree that idolatry is a big no-no in Judaism? No issues with that, right? It's one of the three cardinal sins in Judaism. Idolatry is a big no-no. Why? Okay, it sounds logical. You're going to go ahead and you're going to replace God, the real deal, for some kind of statue, some kind of graven image, or something else that clearly is not God. But here's the problem. The verse in the Torah that actually says not to serve other gods uses the word God. Lo yielecha Elohim acherim. Do not have any other gods. Whoa. One second. If I wanted to tell you something about don't give any credence to X, Y, and Z, I wouldn't use, let's say, for example, okay? Let's say somebody gets rabbinical ordination at Costco. They had a great sale. It was Black Friday. You know? They figured it was black. They were giving out black kippot. Fine. It was Black Friday and you got rabbinic ordination at Costco. Okay. Trust me. If they can make money on it, they would do it. Okay. But if I wanted to then tell you, you can't trust rabbinical ordination from Costco, I would never use the words smicha. Samicha is the Hebrew word for the real deal, for real rabbinical ordination that a rabbi earns. I wouldn't say you can't trust smicha from Costco because that would be cheapening what smicha really is. I can't even, the words smicha from Costco, I feel like I have dirt in my mouth.
I saw it on aisle 7 the other day when I was there.
It just, you know what I'm saying? Which makes it so strange that God in the Torah, when he says don't have idols, which in God's minds is like equal to rabbinical ordination from Costco, right? It's on that level at best. Yet God himself says don't have Elohim. Elohim is God's name. Why would you use God's name to describe little idols? As if, you know, referring to them as if they were something real. Also, to the best of my knowledge, you don't find anywhere in the Torah that there's a prohibition about being an idiot. Unfortunately, there should have been, because many people violate that. However, there is no such prohibition. Why? Because it's common sense. You don't need a prohibition to something that's a ridiculous misconception. You don't make a prohibition, you know, don't put your fingers in an electrical socket. Duh, you don't need a prohibition for that. So why is there a prohibition not to believe in idols? It's a ridiculous idea. So you can say, well, that's just what was in vogue at the time and God was weaning the world on. You can say that and it's fine. But there's a much more basic answer here. Let's go through it like this. Here's God all the way up here. Again, and it's just a metaphor. God is not up. God is not down. God is there, everywhere. But for us to understand, we think linearly. We think in you know, on the upper plane and the lower plane and down below. And that's just the way we think. So you have God's realm out there, and then you have our realm, the physical realm, in which we live. The two are not the same at all. God's realm has no physicality. Our realm has physicality. God's realm is unlimited, infinite. Our realm is finite and limited. How do we connect these two pieces? So there are channels. There are interfaces that connect the worlds. I always give the example that you have either satellite TV or even a simple fax machine. It takes something converts it into something else that gets transmitted to some receiver that takes it, re-scrambles it, and puts it into language that the other side understands. In a similar way, that's what goes on here. God's energy, God's godliness can't just be here you go, carry it on a plate. It has to be through an interface. It has to be transformed into something that we can relate to. There are interlocking levels from that God realm to our realm. Okay, I'm going to leave it on a basic level, not get too deep here. But these interlocking levels from that godliness, that God's realm, down to ours. Let's just look up from our perspective. Look at the closest interface, the closest level that we see, that we can recognize. Forget what's above that. What is that lowest level that we can associate with? That's known as the constellations, the zodiac, the stars. And before you start going online and checking out Gene Dixon's horoscope for the day, not so fast. Is there truth into the concept of astrology? Astrology, the study of the stars? The answer is unequivocally yes. It is legit. We know, just based on science that we've already established, that, for example, the tide is determined by the moon. Right. The moon is part of that constellation system. So things down here on Earth are definitely affected by those zodiac, those constellations. That connection. In Hebrew, by the way, what are constellations known as? Anybody? They're called the mazalot. The word mazal, yes. Mazalot is the plural form of mazal. If you want to say multiples, you say mazalot. Okay? So the zodiac, that interface closest to us, that we can, so to say, recognize, if you want to look at it as it's the end of the shoot, it's the end of that whole process of the godliness getting down to our world, the pipeline, the zodiac is that closest thing. So technically, therefore, the word mazal, which again, most people translate as luck, is the exact opposite of its real meaning. The word mazal means the flow of godliness, the flow of that spiritual energy that infuses our world, which started way up there in the godly realm and works its way through the interface at its lowest level before entering our world, that's called the zodiac. The word mazal means the flow. It's that flow of energy from the higher levels down to ours, the channels. It's the exact opposite of luck or randomness. It's not random. It is specific. This is the godly energy that God wants to bring down to the world at that moment. That's not random. That's not luck. What astrology is the study or the science of understanding this intermediate level, this intermediate world that we can associate with, and using the knowledge of its structure, its patterns, its changes to quote unquote predict events in the physical world. I put the word predict in quotes because it's not prophecy. You're not guessing at something. You're not reading the future. That's prophecy. I'm talking about science. I'm talking about where, if you're a botanist, you're a zoologist, you have the ability to look at a seed and say, oh, this seed comes from a peach tree. And if you nurture it and you water it and give it the right climate and the nutrients and yada, 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 this little seed of a peach tree will produce a tree that on average has 35 bushels of peaches every spring. And therefore, that's not prophecy. You're not predicting the future. That's a knowledge of the here and now. Do you follow what I'm telling you? Good. So what astrology is looking at the stars, looking at the constellations, having understood that in this pattern brings this energy, this pattern does this. Good. So you've studied the science and know that when the stars are aligned like this, this is the typical what happens in our physical world. None of this should come to you as a shock because we've already established this in many areas of science. We know, and I gave you the example in terms of the tide, but we know that the stars, quote unquote, the constellations have an impact. However, and this is the most vital piece of information of our talk tonight. While it's true that under the natural circumstances, if you were to follow the normal regular pattern of the stars aligned like this, then such and such happens, and you believe that that's the source of it, then you've just committed idolatry. Because what you've done is you've bought into the system that says, oh, the source of this and this and this that happens is because the stars were aligned a certain way. Well, from a Torah perspective, we don't buy that because that's not the top of the chain. That's the bottom of the chute. That's the bottom of the pipeline. It started way above that. The real source of it was God working its way through interfaces so that we can associate, we can relate to it. But the minute you cross the line and ascribe actual power as an independent source of God that you ascribe to anything, whether it's a person, a planet, an idol, a graven image, the minute you believe and put your trust in anything other than God as the source of it, that's idolatry. Mm-hmm. Now, once you understand that, I begin to understand why God uses the word Elohim to describe, quote unquote, other gods. Why? Because I'll let you in on one more secret. The word Elohim doesn't really mean God. We use it to mean God, but the word Elohim really means authority or power. That's really what the word means. For example, in the Torah, when it describes the court system, it says you're supposed to come before the judges, right? And they are to adjudicate the case. It uses the word Elohim there. It doesn't mean God. God isn't the one sitting in judgment. That's people. But because they are the power, the authority to issue the ruling, they're given the word Elohim. So if that's the case, then it makes perfect sense that the stars, the constellations, are called Elohim. Why? Because God did give them the power to do it, not as an independent source. Who gives us light and heat every day? What gives us heat and light every single day? I'll give you one. It rises in the east and sets in the west.
The sun.
I know you're going to tell me, Rabbi, you're cutting it too short. That's not the real answer. The real answer is God provides it. That's true. But what's the agent that God uses to provide that sunlight? To give you the heat and the light? It's the sun. The sun is a minister. It's in God's closest cabinet. That's what the sun is. That's what the moon is. That's what all the constellations are. So yes, they are in a, quote, position of authority. Yes, they are in a position of power because they are the ones to give what they give, but they are not the source. The minute you start trying to pay homage and to pray to the intermediary, to the middle person or object, you have just crossed the line from astrology understanding what its natural phenomenons are to now believing it's the source. That's idolatry. Okay. That's it. I just wanted to share that with you. No, we still have to come back to our answer now. Okay. Are we good with this? This is a very, very important concept.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you already answer the window?
Nope.
Okay. Nope. All right. Keep track of the loose ends.
Yeah. It's not loose. It's loose. Okay. So now, let's start working our way out of these nested loops that I just created. Let's talk about Mrs. Potiphar. Mrs. Potiphar has a vision. What kind of vision? Oh, says the Talmud, she saw in the stars that she was destined to have a child with Yosef, a descendant through Yosef. Was that 100% accurate? Yes, it was. 100%. She read the stars perfectly. The stars were aligned that a descendant of hers will come from Yosef. And therefore, she took that as a sign that it must be her. Except she didn't read it perfectly. She's right. The stars did say that a descendant of hers will come through her with Yosef. But she didn't read it that it was her daughter. But what motivated her was this concept that based on the stars, based on natural, again, I'm using the word, the natural, normal running of the world, she was destined to have a descendant through Joseph. Comes along Jacob, and Yosef is now in a quandary because she grabs hold of him. It's not just a question of whether he's going to commit the lustful act with her or not. Yosef probably was told that he had this vision too. Now he's in a quandary. Maybe she's right. The stars, I have to assume Joseph knows the stars. Remember, he had the dream about it too. Joseph reads the stars and sees that it's correct, that in the Potiphar family, he is going to have a child. And now the opportunity presents itself, and he's not sure. What do I do? Do I take Mrs. Potiphar's take on this, and that maybe I am destined to be with her to create a child, or is this not the right answer? Comes along Jacob in a vision. Comes along Jacob and says to him, hey, Joseph. In Yiddish, they would say, Herzachain. Listen up, buddy. In the future, there will come a time when the Jewish people are going to have a temple and they're going to have the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and he's going to have all of his vestments that are, again, we've spoken about this, where those are the tools by which man connects with God. And on it are the names of all the tribes. Joseph, if you commit this crime of being with this married woman, you're going to lose that opportunity to be a part of it. What exactly is he telling Joseph? He's saying, Joseph, my son, you do not have to be in the system that says naturally, based on the stars, here's what has to be. As the Jewish people, we don't buy into that system. We have a little ace in the hole, a little ace up our sleeve. You know what it's called?
God.
It's called God. We leapfrog the system. I don't pray to the stars. I don't give homage to the stars. Yes, they are God's agent, but they are not God. And therefore, one second, Sharon, and therefore, I have the ability to not be limited by what the stars say. I can go above and beyond it. Don't, says Jacob. Joseph, I know what the stars are telling you, but are you going to buy into that system? Then you can't be part of the other system. The other system that says that the Kohen Gadol that acts as a relation, as a conduit between the Jewish people and God, which supersedes the whole planetary system. Which system are you going to be in, Joseph? You want to go down the road of the stars? That's your prerogative, but then you can't be part of the other system and your name's not going to be on that list. That's your choice. You with me? I'll take your question, Sharon, and then we're going to connect it back to window. Liz, don't get nervous.
Okay, so the fact that Joseph had the same vision with the stars, wouldn't he have known that Hashem would not have had him do something and commit adultery with a married woman? Why that?
Wouldn't but the he stars that, say it. But the stars say it.
But he wouldn't.
No. But I knew. He didn't say adultery.
But he was with a if he was with a married woman, God wouldn't have asked him to do that. So right. Even though the star says that, he knows that that couldn't have come from God because God wouldn't ask him to commit a wrong act.
Okay, I'm with you 100%. But have you ever committed a sin, Sharon?
No, never.
Okay, I'll speak from my own experience. We know darn well that God is watching. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. And we know that if I do this, God is going to be aware and is going to demand my explanation at some point.
Right.
Do you still do it?
Yeah.
I'll speak for myself. Yes, I have done that. Why? Why? Because we're human. We face that challenge. Sure, it's easy for us to sit here in our comfortable chairs and say, Joseph would have known that. Easy for you to say. Joseph is facing probably, let's just for argument's sake, probably say Mrs. Potiphar is probably a hot model. You know, who knows? I don't know. It's impossible to say. But your face, come on, Sharon, let's be honest. There are, I don't want to know what the statistics are, but it's not a low number of people that have extramarital affairs. Sadly. Okay. What do you mean? How can a person do it? It's so immoral. Don't they know that it's... Welcome to the human race. Yosef is facing a challenge. Yes, logically, with, I would say, 2020 hindsight, but I don't want to use that. Just with hindsight, right? We know, of course, that's not the right thing to do and blah, blah. But at the time, at the moment, it takes tremendous inner strength to overcome that Yetzirah. It's not easy. Here.
But
go ahead.
But Rabbi, I would say that's why Joseph was chosen, because he did have that strength and he did have that training from his father.
Correct.
And it seems like the whole point, well, the issue here is that he received the training from his father. He bought it completely and he stayed the path. He did not go the other way. So it didn't matter what the stars said, because before the stars, there was his father's teaching.
Correct. I agree 100%. And it's nice to know the end of the story is a support for your argument. But at that moment, it's a challenge. That Yetzirah is mammoth.
Of course it's a challenge.
And you're right. And that is why we hold Yosef up to the high standard of giving him a title as Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef the righteous. I mean, on my best of days, nobody calls me that. It's just, you have to earn that. That's big. Yeah, it's because he did do it. But what I think our sages are trying to impress upon us, and it's along with what you're saying, is that what gave him that strength to do that? It was that teachings from his father, and specifically, what system, Yosef, do you want to be a part of? One that says you can leapfrog the system and go straight to God, no intermediaries, don't buy into that system, or do you want the other system? That's really the teachings, and that's what his father came to him. Now, how does this connect to a window? Okay. So here's what? Okay, so here's one more piece of information. Can anyone think of a story early on in the Torah, somewhat early on, of somebody who looks through a window?
What?
Yep. There's a story.
Was it when the spies were going into the land of Israel?
And yes, it does talk about a window there, but you are way down the line in history. You're like in year 3000. You know, I mean, you're like, no, not that.
Noah.
2500.
Noah. It's Noah in the ark.
It doesn't. That's true. No. It does mention window there, but somebody who looks through a window and sees a couple that are behaving like a couple.
Rachel.
Nope, before Rachel.
It's one of the stories with Abraham and Sarah and the visitors coming, and he was trying to pass her off as his sister, but they were acting in a different manner.
No, very close. Yeah, yeah. Very close. You're one generation off. It's actually
Isaac and Rebecca.
You're close. That was very good. The king Avimelech. Avimelech, the Torah tells us that he looked in Ba'ad HaChalon. He looked through the window and saw, oh, the whole ruse. What do you mean, your brother and sister? I happened to pass by your front bay window and I saw that you're not behaving like brother and sister. That you better not be brother and sister. You know, I don't want to go on record, but there are certain states and cities that people use as examples like brothers and sisters. You just might be a redneck if, but whatever. Okay. But you better. So the Torah there says he looked through the window. Again, we always ask this question. Good, it's a fact. But why is the Torah telling me that? And if it would have just simply said he saw them behaving like husband and wife, I would have gotten the message. Why does it have to be through a window? So again, here also, this one you won't find in the Talmud. This you'll actually find in the Zohar. The Zohar is the book of mysticism. And he describes that the word chalon, the word for window, is a euphemism for the system of the stars. He looked in the window, which meant he looked in the stars and he was able to see. Remember what we call black magic, that idea? It's not a bunch of hooey. It's real. There wouldn't be a prohibition in the Torah not to seek out from black magic to get answers to future questions, right? If there was nothing to it. Again, the Torah doesn't make a prohibition to be an idiot. So there's something real about it. And the Torah says, don't put your faith in that. So Avimelech, like Pharaoh in Egypt, was also had his advisors. They all knew astrology. They all knew the science of the stars. Avimelech was able to see through the stars that Yitzchak and Rivka, Isaac and Rebekah, were not brother and sister. They were husband and wife. And therefore he said, whoa, why are you doing this? Why'd you lie to me? And we go through the whole story. But this piece of information changes everything now. The symbol here of that which represents the constellations, that whole system of the way the stars are aligned and it brings about the certain cause and effect, that is symbolized by a window. Now, we can theorize why that is. Maybe the answer is that when you look through a window, number one, you think it's absolutely clear and you see it exactly for what it is. But we also know that looking through a window, things are distorted a bit. It's not exactly what you think you see. Or if you want, maybe you can look at a window and see your own reflection. So you're looking at the stars to see, well, how does this impact me? And how can I best utilize the system? You know, what's in it for me, kind of, whatever the theory is. But the Zohar makes it very clear that the window is the symbol of this constellation, of this interface that we keep referring to. Therefore, Yaakov appears to his son Joseph, not just with a vision of what's going to be. He appears to him in a window and says, Joseph, it's your moment of truth. Are you going to buy into the system that's represented by a window? That's all about the constellations and therefore give in to Mrs. Potiphar? Or are you more in line with what your brothers eventually in Jewish history are going to believe and connect with God, not with the intermediary? That's why he appeared to him specifically in a window. Which leaves us one last step. The menorah. What do we know about the Greeks? Well, the Greeks were all about nature. The Greeks were all about the physical world in which we live. I've mentioned many times, the Olympics started in Greece. Why? Because it was a belief system, a philosophy about here, right here, right now. The physical body, how the planets all circulate, and everything related to the physical realm. Even the brain, philosophy, science was only if you can rationally understand it. If it was something supernatural, they didn't want any part of it. Yavon, the Greeks, that this whole story of Hanukkah is all about, our victory over them, was a victory that says we do not buy into the system that the Greeks bought into, of where everything has a natural cause and effect. And if you can figure out how the stars are aligned, then you can figure out what the next step is. The Jew says that's not the only system. There's another one, one that supersedes it all. And we don't go with that system. You're lighting your little Chanukiah. You're lighting your little menorah, which is a symbol of the victory, both the military victory, the finding of the jug of oil, the rededication of the temple, which was the connecting point between us and God. You know where we're going to light it? If I can't light it at my front door to be surrounded with mitzvot, reminding myself on one side with the mezuzah, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hear, O Israel, God is one. And on my other side, I remind myself, yes, that one God is the God who I turn to. I'm not going to buy into the other systems that are outside. Look up to the sky. You have another system that's begging for your attention. No. I light my menorah on the outside by the doorway so that I pass through. I have those two reminders. But if you can't light it outside, where's the next best place? Put it in the house, which corresponds directly against their philosophy. Their philosophy of the natural is the window. That's what that Zohar was telling us. The window is the symbol of that natural constellations and zodiac signs. We put our menorah, that little light, boom, right up against that window. Yeah, because our philosophy is extremely different. I don't buy into the window philosophy. I buy into my menorah philosophy that says that there are miracles. Can I explain it rationally? No. The Greeks will say, then it's phooey. No, I don't. I believe that there's a God who's the real source of everything and is not bound by anything. The natural order of law, the natural cycle of the world is one system that God put in place, but it's not the only. And we can supersede it and go above it. So I light my Chanukiah right up against the window. I will tell you that a few years back, it was the eighth night of Hanukkah. And at the time, my children were all home. And each one of them lit their own Chanukiah. So you can imagine, we had many, many, many Chanukiah on our windowsill. Eighth night. So you're talking full menorah. There must have been seven of them, I think. I think all six kids were home, plus my wife and I. So that's seven. So you're looking at 9 times 7, 63 candles burning bright.
Wow.
Guess what happened?
You got the curtains caught on fire.
No, thank God it was not that. It was a cold, frigid night, and my wife and I were with Rabbi Dave and Fran and Adam. We were on our way up to Frederick to do a Hanukkah party with you guys, and my children called and said, uh-oh. I said, what's the matter? They said, there's a crack in the bay window right opposite where we lit, and the crack is getting bigger. Yeah.
Cold and hot.
Exactly, Sid. The heat on the inside and the cold on the outside absolutely cracked and shattered. Thank God it didn't shatter in the falling apart, but it was gone, finished. My wife, when I told her over this insight about the window representing that, and that's the Greek philosophy that we're up against, she goes, maybe that's what happened. We all lit, and the power of what we were lighting destroyed the window. So that's a very expensive lesson to teach. You get one time, one. But that, I think, is really what's going on. In that, the reason why in halacha, and it's only, as I said, for the story of Hanukkah. It's not for Sukkot. It's not for Shavuot. It's not for Pesach. It's not for anything else. Why? Because it is directly against the Greek philosophy that says we buy into that constellation, that zodiac system. We put our Chanukiah right up against it and say that's not our system. One last piece. One last tiny piece. Can you think of another person who also was told by God not to buy into the zodiac system, and you're not bound by it? You can go above and beyond it. Earlier than the story of Joseph and Jacob. Who? Say, Alan, you're saying it, but I want to hear it.
Abraham?
Abraham, that is correct. The famous story of that he's in the tent and he's saying to God, oh, what's going to be? I have no children to bequeath my legacy about you. And God says to him, go outside your tent and look up to the stars. Remember that story?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why do you have to go outside the tent? I'm inside my house. And if you were to ask me, hey, Rabbi, can you count the stars? I'd be like, I can't count the stars. There are too many. Good. So shall your descendants be. No. But God says to him, go outside. Why? Because Rashi, again, quoting an early source, Rashi says that God was telling Abraham, you're right. If you look at it under the natural order of things, a fellow by the name of Abram is not destined to have a child. The stars will never align for you to have a child. But let you in on a secret, Abraham. If I tell you, you can supersede the system, you'll have a child. Go outside. It doesn't only mean physically go outside your tent. Go outside your knowledge. Go outside your what you knew till this point. That everything ran according to the basics of natural. No. Go out there, look up at the stars and say, ha ha ha, I'm not bound by you. I can go above you. It's not a coincidence. The exact term that God tells Abraham in that story, he uses the terminology, Vayotze oto hachutza, and he took him outside and said to him, look up heavenward. That phrase, he took him outside, is almost identical to the phrase that's used by Joseph leaving Mrs. Potiphar. Exact same expression of where it says, Vayonas Vayotze Hachutza. He fled and he ran outside. Same expression. Why? Because it's the same story. What God was telling Abraham, you're not bound by that system of mazalot. Oh, this is the way it has to be. That's the same thing that Jacob told Joseph. You're not bound by that. Joseph said, I'm in. And he went and he fled and he went outside. I'm not bound by that system. I believe in a higher power. And finally, once Abraham goes outside and he says, no, I can't count the stars, what is the blessing God gives him? Ko yiyeh zarecha. So shall your seeds be. Ko, so, yiyeh, it should be, zarecha, your seed. Your descendants should be like the stars. But the word ko is spelled chaf hey. Anybody know what chaf hey is? What number is chaf? Come on, you Aleph Beis people. How much was chaf?
Have to get my notes.
40?
20. Hey, it's 20. 18, isn't it?
20. Robin, how much?
20.
20. Chaf 20. Is 20. And hey?
5.
So chaf hey is 25. Does that mean anything to anybody? What's the holiday we're celebrating? I'm sorry, remind me.
Oh, Hanukkah.
How do you spell Hanukkah? Chanu, they rested. Chafe, on the 25th. The holiday of Hanukkah starts on the 25th of Kislev. It's the only one. It's the only one that starts at the end of a month. Everything else is the beginning of the month or the middle. Chafei. The sages point out that this was a reference to a much later point in history on the 25th. Yeah, on the 25th of Kislev, thousands of years later, there'll be a group of Jews who are going to fight to make sure that this philosophy of the Jews, not the Greeks, is what is successful. And therefore, on Hanukkah, we light our menorah, our Chanukiah. That's the light that is inspiring us to what our true belief is. And where do we put it? Right at the window. Yeah. We look out at the window, not just to publicize the miracle. That's true. But it's also a reflection inward. I need to know that I'm looking at the menorah and I don't buy into the window philosophy. Window shopping, that's okay. Window believing, no, that's a no-no. No. Window philosophy is not healthy. Window shopping, go for it. That's only monetary expenses anyway. This is the real deal. Don't buy into the window philosophy. All right. Anyway, it's late. But that's the reason. Did I bring it all together? Okay.
I have a quick question.
Yes, Robin.
Why do people think mazel means luck if it really means luck?
That was my question too, Robin.
Right, Karen, good. We got it together. We're on the flow.
I'll tell you why. Because people are ignorant. They don't know. You want to know what the real meaning of mazel tov is now? Makes perfect sense. The person who's experiencing a good event, right? You wish them mazel tov. Their son got engaged. Their daughter got bat mitzvah, whatever it is. And you wish them mazel tov. You know what you're really saying? Is that flow of spiritual energy that you're experiencing right now, which is clearly good. You're having a very positive experience. I wish, my hope and my wish is that flow of goodness continues your way. That's really what mazel tov is. That flow of goodness, let it only continue. May you be blessed with many more like it.
Okay.
It's not luck. It's not random. It's just the opposite. It is a clearly divined, willed experience of positivity. Let it only continue. That's the wish for mazel tov.
So mazel tov means good flow, basically?
Yep.
Okay.
That's the concept. I'm not telling you that it's the literal translation, but that's the concept it's trying to convey. Yes.
Okay.
In the Anyone very else? Beginning, you said something about that there was a Jewish era. In the very beginning of what you were talking about.
ERA.
There have been eras, yeah.
And I heard ERRORS, but with the New York accent. And I'm like, what kind of mistakes?
Okay, so from here on in, I'm going to try to do my best imitation of non-Brooklyn accent. An era.
Era.
Jewish epic. ERA.
So, Rabbi, God is telling Abraham to go outside, think outside the box. You're not stuck to natural things. And Joseph sees his father, and his father said, think outside the box. Remember what I told you. You don't have to listen to her. It'll happen, but the way it's supposed to.
Correct. That's correct.
So we're famous for thinking outside of the box.
Outside the box. And again, I say this jokingly, but there's a lot of truth to this. You know what Jews are also known for? We hate paying retail. Right. Why? Why? It sounds crazy, but think about it. It's because why should I pay a middleman? I can go straight to the owner. That's exactly the concept. Why should I pay off the idol? Why should I pay off the constellations? I know the owner. I go straight to God. I should pay retail. Ah, nechtegetug. Not happening.
That too.
That's whatever. That's the concept.
And you know, with all of the troubles and problems that Jews have had through the ages, the way they survive is thinking outside the box, not.
Yes, you know. But it's not just because we have creativity. It's because we understand that I'm not bound by anything. There is no such, I'll tell you a great story. when we were moving to Ohio, so I tried to do some research, you know, early back when I was still a young married and my oldest was 2 years old. And we were moving to Ohio, moving to Columbus. So I wanted to do a little research on, you know, I got to know my new state. So I found out that the state motto is "With God, anything is possible." And I was like, so excited, like, wow, such a religious place, you know? And then I found out there's Ohio State Buckeyes and that's the religion they're really referring to. But the whole idea that somebody, it's true. Now, I'm not sure that we're on the same page who we're defining as God, but I get the concept because that's really, Michelle, that's really our perspective. With God, anything is possible.
Right.
So yes, right. I don't have to think in the box where I'm limited. And say, we always think outside the box because there is no such thing as impossible.
Right. We have limitations, but if we look to God,
that's it.
There are no limitations.
That's correct. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Perfect. Have a wonderful last 2 days of Hanukkah. Enjoy. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Stay out of the cold. And hopefully we'll catch up again next week. Tuesday night, second half of the letter Samach. Wednesday night, next lesson. I have no idea. I have to look what title I gave it. I have no idea what it is. But I'm sure I got something. Somewhere.
Pain in the neck.
I even know what it is. Pain in the neck. That's next week. That's good. It's also about the Jewish people. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. That's took us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great night, everybody.
Thank you. Have a great night. Bye. Stay safe.